Hello, this is Bespoke Speaks. I'm Christine, and I'm here with a good friend and colleague of mine, Dan Bird. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you doing?
Not bad.
Yeah. So, Dan and I work together at ArtsEd, which is a drama school, and we both teach on the BA musical theater course. So I teach voice and speech, and Dan teaches the acting, and we work quite closely together. And Dan is also a director. So Dan, would you like to say a little bit about yourself? And
So I have been a director for like, I don't know, 12 years, largely working in a lot of work with young people, and for a period of time, a lot of work creating interactive productions where the audience are part of the story making process or storytelling process. So that was a big chunk of work. And then throughout that, I've just done a lot of drama school work, particularly working with students on third year productions, but also in teaching, kind of trying to make the thing I'm really interested, I guess, is in about really clear storytelling.
Yeah.
So that's the main angle of stuff that I've done before being at ArtsEd was trying to give the students the arc of a character, and then that's kind of led into teaching stuff at ArtsEd, like working with the first years primarily, and giving them a bunch of basic stuff so that they can independently be telling stories rather than just taking direction.
That's the
thing that frustrates me.
Yeah. So as in like they're coming into the room and they already have choices and thoughts.
Exactly,
about,
yeah. So for particularly the work that I did with my company, Bad Physics, we required actors who were very much, quite a few of them came from stand-up backgrounds who were capable of taking a story forward, but also because it was interactive, moving sideways, responding to what an audience member might give them. So they had to be like really, really malleable, really thinking on their feet. And I think it coloured all of the work I've done, even if it's just like straight theatre, in that I don't really have that many ideas. What I want is a bunch of people who turn up and have loads of ideas, and I just like pick and choose that.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to really do with the empty students at the moment, is give them as much agency so they are equal creatives. And they're not. And I think there's a really big thing with like often with musical theatre students, because there are bits of their disciplines which are kind of being told what to do.
Yeah.
And I think that they particularly arrive here not being particularly good at knowing what they think about stuff and making their own, feeling comfortable and empowered to make their own creative decisions. And I think we do pretty good work in the first and second year getting them to discover that, and then inevitably they get to the third year, and I think the first bit of those rehearsal periods they're immediately like, why do I just go, well, tell me what to do and I'll do it. And so I think that's what we're trying to do, is change that culturally a bit, so that they feel like they are equal creatives.
Yeah, that takes
some
adjustment.
It really does, because they're also, they're young and they've not probably been given that much autonomy and that much ability to do stuff. And there is just that inevitable hierarchy, and there's that inevitable fear of, I'm suddenly in a third year show and I just want to look good. I want to like...
Yeah. And I've got to hit these dance steps, and I've got to hit this note at this specific time.
Exactly.
And within that, how can I be creative with my acting, essentially? And in a way that can be helpful in some senses, because you know you have a structure that you can be creative within. So how do you not let the structure kind of take over?
Exactly. And I think there's probably a psychological hierarchy of, these are the things I've got to do first, and then at the end of it I might think about what I'm doing with my acting.
Yeah.
And I think you could kind of see that in work through the school, but particularly I think by the time of performance that's generally solved itself, but you can see it in the students in those first few weeks of rehearsal, where actually what's happening in the scene or what's happening with their character is just like so low down the hierarchy. And hopefully what we're doing is trying to get them engaged so that it's part of that process, part of learning the steps, is character.
It's being motivated by the character.
Exactly. Who knows how successful that is going to shape up to be.
We're going to be very successful.
Well, of course.
We're going to be extremely successful. And in your experience as a director and in your experience as an acting teacher, I'm just curious from your perspective, like, what are you wanting from actors vocally?
The thing that I get a bit obsessive about is colour. I was thinking about this. It's basically, like, very, very often you go and see something and an actor will sit in a particular pitch range, mm-hmm. I think. It's very easy to get stuck where inflections get very repetitive and the pitch range gets really repetitive.
Yeah.
And a bit stuck. And I suppose the thing that I, like, always I'm trying to find is, or trying to hope that actors bring, is an instinctive sense that particularly pitch, but pitch, dynamic, attack, all that sort of stuff, all of the qualities are doing two things. One is giving variety, almost for variety's sake in some ways, so that our ears don't get stuck in a pattern. Because I think if my ear gets caught up in a particular vocal pattern, a particular vocal pitch,
it's hard to hear anything else.
Hard to hear, and I get a bit fixated on it, and then I'm kind of like, oh, I actually haven't really listened to anything you've said.
Yeah.
But more than that is that is the ability to make the voice do what the text is trying to do so properly. So it's the text element is that every single thought has been thought through really clearly, but is the connectivity of the text to the actual world it's talking about. So one of the things I'm doing in classes at the moment is breaking down each line of text and connecting it to anything that exists in the real world. So I don't know, it's maybe like the idea of a target. Mm-hmm. I'm never quite sure quite how that terminology works, but trying to make sure that if you are talking about a particular thing, then you have either like the actual experience of it. So if I'm talking about the cup that I'm drinking from, then that's actually there and I'm making a proper connection to it. Mm-hmm. Or this is what we're working on a lot at the moment, is the imaginative connection to a thing that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. But if you make it in your head, it exists, then it just has that texture of reality. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I get kind of particularly stuck in is trying to use, for me, it really, really often is pitch to just give as much colour as possible so that then everything feels spontaneous and so that everything is responding to the beat by beat moments.
So it's also differentiated from moment to moment.
Exactly, because there's something about like when an actor gets very endgame, like they know what the end of the scene is, they know what the end of the thought is, then everything is just kind of building to there.
Yeah.
And you can hear it in the technicalities of their voice that you go, well, I know where this is headed because you've already set it up in your tone, in your pace, in your delivery, whereas I want to get there as late as possible.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the big thing, is it's always getting everywhere as late as possible by going down lots of, not red herrings, but like little side routes of thought and the sparky spontaneity. So we do quite a bit of work with the foundation students who are working on monologues, thinking about like light bulb moments where a thought pops into their head, or moments of bravery. So just trying to trigger that thought isn't the same as the last thought, and what's the easiest way of differentiating? Well, a pitch differentiation tells me that it's a different thought, whereas actually you've just said four sentences.
Exactly.
And they all seem like they are the same thing. And ultimately they are the same idea, but they're four different versions of the same idea.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, the big...
Yeah, that is a big one.
Mm.
And that kind of gets to the crux of where voice work and acting work meet.
Absolutely.
Because your voice isn't going to change if you don't have that differentiation of thought.
Mm.
And if you... even just in terms of knowing like what your actions are or what your objectives are, if you're not really clear on what you're doing with that particular thought, what you're trying to say, who you're trying to reach, then your voice has no reason to shift.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said about like those things linking.
Mm.
And something we do a lot too, especially, I do this a bit more on the acting course than on the MT course, but I'm going to try to bring it in a little bit more with the MT course, is even just getting them to speak their lines in gibberish.
Yeah.
So that, because sometimes people get too comfortable with the words, and they, even though words are important, they let the words do the work for them as opposed to communicating the words vocally and physically. So like doing the same things in gibberish, if that's something that you are getting a note about a lot as an actor, that might be something you could consider doing as a way of doing what Dan's talking about, of how do I actually find not just the whole thought, but the specificity of the journey of the thought as well.
That's great. It kind of connects to a thing that we do, which is about really listening to what the previous person's done. So there's a text exercise I picked up years ago. I was a staff director at the National, and it was one of the voice teachers, the head of voice, did this exercise, which is just repeating the previous person's line and asking it as a question. And we'd spend loads of time after Christmas, and maybe it's not, maybe it's after this half term, doing exercises which are not about your line, they're about really thinking, basically, like, what has triggered you to speak? Somebody said something, and like forcing the processing of, okay, you said this thing, what do I think about that? Oh, okay, well, I reckon I think this is the response. And trying to really make one line be a proper thought through response to the previous line, because obviously in real life our brains process it, but they are processing that in the same level of detail. You just have to find the fake version of it, because again it's really frustrating when a line is delivered and it feels inevitable. It feels like it's the thought you've already had before the other person has spoken,
and you've just been waiting to say it.
And so we did some good work last year, but it's a thing I think you have to just constantly be reminded of, and it's just practice. So that's why one of the things for the shows that I created with my company, having stand-up comedians and improv comedians, you have that instinct, well, not instinctively, but they've worked really, really hard to go, not just I've been given something, to really listen to the detail of what has been delivered to me, because what I need to do is take that and then convert it into something else. And it's such a joy when you're working with an actor who can properly, like, bounce an idea backwards and forwards. That's the really thrilling bit, that the text is, like, spontaneously happening in that moment and is a direct response to the specific thing you just said.
Actors get really caught up on their own lines, don't they? And actually, a huge part of the communication process is the listening process.
Yeah, totally.
And that's such a beautiful way to work on it, of having them repeat the other person's line.
And it's such a cul-de-sac that I think actors get stuck in. You learn your lines, and you learn, like, okay, I've got the first five lines. Yeah. I think very often there's a really arbitrary process for learning lines. I know, like, years ago when I acted, I would go, like, I'm going to get the first 10 in my head, and then I'm going to get the next 10, I'm going to get the next 10. But that's a completely artificial way of, like, your thoughts aren't processed 10 lines at a time.
Yeah.
Your thoughts are processed based around, like, what I call an event, when something changes. So actually learning text in sections that have a logical, like, character or narrative, I don't know, journey to them, rather than making line learning a technical, I don't know, like a by rote kind of thing, trying to find a way that learning lines is connected to what the character's doing in that moment.
Yeah, and part of the experience of the scene.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then making it not actually be about learning lines, but making it about learning responses, I guess. So that each thing is not the next thing that I say, it's the next response I have, the next thought I have.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense, of going back to what you said at the beginning, of people's voices staying in the same pitch.
Yeah.
Or in the same range, or on the same trajectory. I mean, your voice just won't do that if it's in response to someone.
Absolutely, yeah.
It just doesn't happen. So if you're learning it as a response, and then you're keeping that flexible based on what's actually going to happen in the moment, then your voice is going to respond more fluidly.
Yeah, it does. It's picking, like, it's that thing about it, just we pick up on so many little nuances, and ultimately it's just loads of different tactics to persuading that person, or, like, I don't know, capturing that person's imagination. And then sometimes, like, faking, like, doing exercise where you fake the pitch really high or really low, where you just basically force yourself to do something else. Because I do think we're attuned, and I don't know, I come from a slightly musical background, I get just a bit hung up if the tune stays the same. Like, I really like melodies that move about, and I find melodies that stay in a narrow band I get a little bit frustrated by.
Yeah, and but I think that's very human.
Yeah.
I think we will stop listening if everything sounds the same, because it's too hard to pay attention, because it's just a repetition of what's come before. Yeah. So, I think you're
And I think most people, though, don't, like, kind of like saying in real speech, you don't do that because ultimately, like, subconsciously somewhere, we're trying to affect that person. We're trying to do a thing to that person.
Yeah.
And we know that if we just stick... You have to be really kind of self-absorbed just to be ploughing your own furrow rather than going, oh, that thing, and, like, constantly checking in, again, subconsciously checking in with the person that you're talking to go, did they get that bit?
Yes.
Oh, well, therefore I can move on to the next bit.
Yes, exactly. So it's you're listening even as you're talking, because you're watching body language to see how it's being received.
Yeah.
And that's helping differentiate as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's something we talk about too. And that goes back to even, like, actors get really hung up on how they should feel.
Mm.
And sometimes that's why they put a tone on something,
because
they think, oh, this is what the character must feel. But I think part what you're saying, and I think what we advocate here is that, like, if you just try to do something to somebody else, you're going to start feeling something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they're either cooperating with you or not cooperating with you, or getting, like, it or not getting it.
Yeah, the feeling is a symptom of the thing you did.
Yes.
Which it is in real life. Like, you don't...
We're not walking around trying to feel all the time.
Yeah.
I think
we're kind of actively trying to not feel
exactly.
half the time. It's like you're just busy doing shit, and then you happen to feel things, and actually feeling stuff is very often a pain in the arse.
Yeah, that's so true.
Like, sometimes feeling stuff is like, oh, it's been so great, and you like wallow in that moment, but then actually you're going, oh, you want another hit of it, basically.
Yeah.
You want your fix of, like, if it's an enjoyable thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that thing...
Even if you're enjoying it, we're not going around all the time trying to show our feelings to everybody either. We're not going like, hey, this is how I feel right now.
Well, some people do.
Well, some people do.
But those people are really quite hard to be around, aren't they?
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Because as soon as someone starts telling you that they feel a particular way, A, you don't believe it, because, like, why would you tell somebody? And also then you just go, oh, well, I'm never, ever going to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if somebody starts... showing you that they feel a particular way, you instinctively shut down and go, well,
yeah,
I don't want you're completely negating my opportunity of experiencing that.
Yes Interesting. Interesting that it's like that in life, and it's also like that when you're watching it on stage.
Probably even more so because it's just, like, it's self-indulgent, whereas that thing of allowing yourself, that's one of the ways that, like, we do a lot of very early stuff with the first years is perform a, like, an imaginative exercise, and then I just ask, well, how did it feel?
Mm.
And go, okay, well, that feeling then is a thing that was a result of, it was a result of you thinking, you're imagining this, you were trying to connect to this particular idea, and it made you feel this. Well, if you connect to that particular idea and you make me connect to that particular idea, then maybe I will feel that, rather than reverse engineering about and going, right, well, that's the effect I wanted to have.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I get there?
Mm-hmm.
You can trick yourself. You can know, well, if I connect to this particular imaginative idea or this temperature or texture or whatever, it might produce this effect.
Yeah.
And I think you're right that there's that sense of, this is what it should feel like, so I'm going to feel that thing.
Mm.
But then... it just, there's nowhere really for it to go. There's only one version of it. There's the version you've already decided in your head, rather than the slightly surprising, it is that feeling, it is that, like, emotional response, but it's got, like, it's come from a bit of a weird place.
Yeah. And there can be so much more to it than that.
Because
we're never just feeling one thing.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
And then tying it back to that, like, the idea of, like, pitch and voice, is that we can just pick up so many bits of nuance. Like, it's those moments of, like, a crack in the voice, it's those moments of something that's surprising that you didn't quite notice.
And that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. And that's actually then the big thing that goes through the whole of this first year's work, is that we're trying to get them to notice that in other people, and basically notice that is character. That moment when a person's voice breaks, or there's a tiny little beat, or there's just this moment of surprise in that gap, I think is the moment where you go, oh, they're that kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I do kind of think we're defined by the actions we take, but I think actually it's in the moments of conflict or moments of choice, like am I going to do that, am I going to do that, in those moments of held tension, often when you're not speaking or something complex comes through, I think that's the moments when we fall for someone or we hate, we distrust someone. It's that moment when the voice, it like a poker tell almost. Those seem to me like the really interesting bits when you're not, because in real life, like, you've got a sense of the thing you're trying to do subconsciously, but it's the moment when you fuck up a little bit, when you give it a, you get the, your brain reveals something that you didn't intend it to reveal through your voice. That's a really interesting bit.
Yeah, that's so useful, I think, for actors to hear from your perspective, because I think sometimes actors think that voice work is about ironing out that stuff and making things sound really clean nice, but that's not what it's about. It's about learning how to let your voice be a conduit for your inner life, whatever is going on, instead of hiding or suppressing or masking your inner life. And if that means it cracks, or that means it wavers, or that means it surprises you, like, that's the game. That's what we're going for. Yeah.
That thing about, like, ironing things out, I think actors definitely get a sense of that, because there is this idea, there are those actors who are so famous for having, like,
nice voices. Yeah, yeah.
And that's such an old-fashioned idea.
Yeah, and it's especially true in the UK. Yeah. It's a really popular idea in the UK.
It's so fetishized, that, like, rich RP thing. Whereas actually what you want on stage is voices that, like, really connect to a human being, and not the actor's voice.
Yeah.
That suddenly, I'm going to put on this slightly pompous, measured thing, because I think that's what actors do.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, that's just a thing that's getting in between me and you.
Yeah.
I very quickly just go, oh, it's quite frustrating.
Yeah. And it does go kind of into a pattern that then it's hard to hear.
And actually it's a bit... makes you a bit sleepy. So sometimes, I find listening to audiobooks of fiction, I find it really difficult to follow, because
they always have a tone.
They always have a tone, and they're quite nice to listen to, but they're too nice to listen to.
Yeah.
And I go a bit like, oh, well, I actually haven't listened to anything you're saying.
Yeah.
Whereas audiobooks of non-fiction tend to be read by the author, and they have this really untrained sense of, when I'm just going to talk it. There's lots of other issues with it, like there's inflection issues that non-fiction authors fall into.
But because they're connected to their words, there's much more of a sense of connection to the thought.
Exactly, and actually it just keeps you awake, and it keeps you alive. They tend to, they're not aware of any of the poetry in it. And I just think when people are aware of, like, the language and the poetry of the language, then they're a bit like, oh, well, that can do the work.
Yeah.
And then I get, like, sleepy. I mean, it's quite nice sleepy.
Yes.
But I don't really follow the story.
Yeah. So when you need a good nap,
exactly.
You listen to an audiobook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just put it on and drift off.
Oh, that sounds lovely. So I think what I'm getting from this generally, Dan, is that really it's useful when actors know how to approach a text vocally in a way that they're really bringing it to life and connecting to their own experience of the text, which then just naturally brings that kind of more pitch range and that.
Yeah, it's natural, but it's also, I really value the ability to fake all of that stuff.
Yes,
it's
to
just,
find it.
Just to do some mad stuff with it and then see where it leads.
Yeah.
And, like, happy accidents. So being in a rehearsal room where actors feel able to just try, like weird stuff.
Yeah.
Not just for the sake of it, but they will be playful and they'll, like, be deliberately, not messing about, but I'm trying to think what it is, but deliberately, like, trying a bunch of different things, trying to, like, slightly get a laugh. And I don't mean, like, playing the scene to get a laugh. I just mean being irreverent. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Being irreverent with what's going on and doing slightly weird stuff. And then it reveals a little something.
Yeah. And then making discoveries from that.
Yeah.
So, like, being bolder vocally than maybe you normally would be.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that's the final version of what happens.
Exactly.
But you might discover something from what happens.
Totally.
Especially if this person speaks in a different rhythm than you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you just spend the entire rehearsal period, like, just cherry-picking all the really joyful bits.
Yeah.
Rather than... trying to like machine tool someone to get to a particular
place. That's not so fun.
There's almost no fun in that, because then what all you've really done is like shaped something in the way you hear it in your head. I used to be like a bit weird about that when I was much younger. I'd hear it in a particular way and be like, oh, it's kind of got to be that way.
Yeah.
And then I quite quickly realised that there's no joy in that, because actually it might sound, that's just my taste. That's just what my ear happens to be.
Yeah.
Whereas people who do like make slightly mad choices and you go, that is so far from the way I've heard it in my head, but it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Well, therefore that's great. And I'm listening to it more because it was a bit mad.
Yeah. And that's the other thing kind of coming out of this, is that the listening part of the process is just as important,
yes,
if not more so.
Yeah, yeah.
Because everything is being said in response. Mm. So the more that's being focused on not just what's happening in your lines, but what are the events that are going on that are leading you to say the things that you're saying, then there's more of a responsiveness in the voice combined with those bold choices.
Yeah.
Hmm. Great stuff.
Cool.
That's great advice, Dan. Anything else you'd like to say?
I don't think so.
Is there a way that people could like find out more about you? Do you have like a website?
Well, I did have a website, but it's died.
Oh, right.
So whether it ever resurfaces, I don't quite know.
Oh, that's okay. So we'll leave people with some mystery then around you. You can check Dan out on the Arts Ed website. I think his name is on
there. My name's on it. I don't think there's any info about me on it. I don't think there's even a picture.
Well, you can read his name.
Be a man of mystery.
Arts Ed website. And we'll leave you a man of mystery for now.
Exactly.
And if you want to know more, you just have to come to Arts Ed and train with us.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So thanks so much for joining us today, Dan. And thank you for listening. And we'll see you next time. Bye.